another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream.
Good morning, this is Jack Spierka with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and changing economic times, and the things we can do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Good morning, folks. Today you do have me in the morning. I'm going to try to get this podcast up today. I'm getting pretty good about getting more than five podcasts done by Friday and getting ahead of the curve by the end of the week. Fridays, I just don't seem to have one left in me, and I don't seem to have one prepared for Monday. So Monday, I end up having to upload a podcast about noon. Ish when I get a little bit of time at work to do that. So anyway, off with the excuses and on with the show. Today's show I'm going to talk about is economic collapse. And I'm not going to talk tremendously about the reasons that economic collapse could occur. We've talked about that in the past, and we'll definitely talk about it again maybe this week, because I'm on a roll for this week. I've seen a lot of things right now that are making me more and more concerned about it. Super inflation spike and general collapse of the economy, and the more long-term, more probable occurrence that I see of, like, this slow spiral downward that I've talked about before, I think could begin any time, and then it's a matter of how long it takes to get to a point where the shit has truly hit the fan. And generally speaking, I would tell you that the shit will hit the fan when people figure out that it's hit the fan, at least from the economy standpoint. In other words, it'll have really hit the fan for a lot of people, and it actually already has hit the fan for a lot of people right now. They can't pay their bills, they can't get by, they have to make really hard choices. But when the general population realizes it and responds to it, that's when we're going to have the real explosion. So it's just a matter of when, not if, unless like some real miracle occurs, like, I don't know, you know, America comes to its senses and elects Ron Paul by riding or something, which I don't even think is possible. So we're going to have a real hard road to hoe, and I want to talk about, like, after this happens, what are the unique survival situations? What are the unique needs that we're going to have compared to something like that people are more more prepared, I would say more prepared for, but more expecting of, like a natural disaster or something like that. Before I do, though, I just can't help but comment real briefly on this whole thing with former presidential candidate and former vice presidential candidate John Edwards. Now, my takes will be a little bit different than anything you've heard in the news, I think, about this. I've heard nothing about this since last week. Friday, I didn't feel like doing a show, so I turned talk radio on. I put every talk radio station on I could find, and all I heard was John Edwards, and he did this, and he did that, and he met with this woman a month ago, and he wants a paternity test, and she doesn't, and on and on and on, till I wanted to freaking scream and smash the radio out of my vehicle with the heel of my boot. That's how bad it got at some point. So I got in the car this morning, and I was on my way to the place. I pick up a cup of coffee on the way to work so that I can occasionally take a sip and keep my mouth moist during this these podcasts. Just talking for 30, 40 minutes can wear you down if you don't. And you know what? I turned the radio on until I got to the place. Figured I'd maybe get a little bit of buzz or information, something to throw in the show, and John Edwards, blah, 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 blah. What was he doing meeting? Holy God, it's been since Friday. It's been since Friday, and they're saying the same thing because nothing's changed. And I started to think, wait a minute, why is this a big deal right now? Okay, this guy's not going to get the vice presidential nomination. I don't think anybody expected Barack to pick him. He's not up for, I don't think a Senate seat is up for re-election. This cycle, so he's free and clear there. He's not going to lose his office because the sheeple will forget about this by the time his next election comes around. His wife isn't leaving him, his kids haven't disowned him, and the whole story is a big non-starter, and it doesn't look like this baby's his because he says he wants a paternity test in his mistress does not want one, which tells you, odds are, it's not his child. So, What's the big story? Why are we giving, you know, 5 days of coverage to this amidst the Olympics? That's because McCain and Obama haven't done anything stupid recently. That's why. They haven't really done anything at all. You know, they threw a few attack ads at each other and whatnot, but overall, nobody's going to do anything stupid until after the convention next month, and that's making the news people bored. They don't know what to talk about with politics, so along comes this country boy that does something stupid and cheats on his wife, which is, you know, as wrong as the day is long, and we're going to just jump on him and dogpile on this guy for a couple weeks because we got nothing else to talk about. That's what's going on there. Now, you know, I don't think I need to say this to y'all, but I mean, come on, man. John Edwards' politics and my view of politics, you know, are kind of far from being aligned with each other. I mean, I kind of prefer, if somebody said I can either taser you 5 times or you can have John Edwards as your president for 4 years, I'd say, well, the taser's only going to last a couple seconds. Go ahead and taser me and keep that boy out of the White House. All right, so I do not support this guy politically at all. But I also figure what the guy does in his own time is his own business, and it ain't like Clinton's thing with Lewinsky because he ain't our president. I mean, if the people of South Carolina or North Carolina, whichever one of the Carolinas this guy's serving, want to hold him accountable, talk about it in the Carolinas. I think the nationally-wise, I don't think we care, and I just wanted to point out to you why I think these idiots are doing this. So, there's your news in brief short from Jack Spirko today. About something you're probably tired of hearing about. Maybe I made it a little more entertaining than these clowns are. Anyway, let's go on with the topic of today's show, which again is, you know, what we kind of have to look forward to if we do have this eventual financial collapse of our economy, and what kind of unique situation we would find ourselves in compared to other disasters. So, I mean, one of the things we can start to do is just kind of look at, you know, what we can expect from a financial collapse, what it would do to the economy, what it would do to individuals, what it would do to society, what it would do to our daily lives, and how it would impact people, and what it would allow us to continue to do, and what it would take away from us. And when we look at those, it'll start to form a picture for us about what would be unique about a financial collapse. One way to do that would be to look at common preparations that we make and how they would work for us, let's say, in a tornado or a major weather event of some kind of hurricane or just a massive storm or a blizzard or an earthquake or a volcano, I mean, whatever. Any kind of regional level disaster and what our preparations would do for us and what they would do for us or not do for us in an economic collapse situation. I mean, the first thing that springs to mind for me is I advise, and I think it's a good idea, to have some cash reserves, a few hundred to maybe a few $1,000 in cash in your home, on your person, somewhere that you can get to it immediately without having to go to a bank. This is really good in an economic collapse because you can get your money. But here's the other side of that. In an economic collapse, what we know is going to happen is that there'll be massive rates of inflation, and that money will only do something for you for so long. In other words, if you were in a major weather event, lost your home, but got out and had some cash reserves and, let's say, some money in the bank, because just because the tornado wipes out my neighborhood or a hurricane wipes out a place like New Orleans or Galveston or, God forbid, Houston, doesn't mean that the banks collapse, right? So in a situation where the advice is make sure you're protecting your investments, have some cash reserves both in cold hard cash in hand and in the bank, that works really good for you, even relatively long term, in this, you know, kind of weather disaster scenario or just about any other type of disaster that we can come up with short of a world-ending scenario. You know, having money will work. But in an economic collapse, having money won't be a bad thing, but it's a matter of how good it will be and how long it will matter. I mean, if you talk to people that have been in countries where hyperinflation has taken place, Russia in the 90s after the Soviet Union broke up, Argentina during their massive inflation rate, or right now it's either Zimbabwe or Zaire, I'm not sure which one it is. It's one of those countries in Africa where basically you need $500,000 of their dollars to buy a bottle of Coke. So if you have $10,000 in cash in this type of scenario, it's not necessarily the case that it's going to be that big a deal for you once you've gotten to a point where everything really starts to domino and cascade and just fall down. Because in that scenario, I mean, your money may become worthless. Your $10,000 may be worth $1,000 in today's economy. Or it may be worth $100 in today's economy. And that can happen rather quickly. So what we really need to think about that's quite a bit different from other scenarios with an economic collapse is what do we need to survive that we won't be able to buy with money that we absolutely have got to have. And as I've said in other podcasts, that's going to really come down to three things: food, shelter, and water. And there's different threats to each one of those. The shelter is usually the biggest threat because it's usually the thing that people have large amounts of debt on. Now, I guess what would be good for you, and this is a postulation, this is a guess here, but if we had runaway inflation, right, where all of a sudden it was costing tremendous amounts of money to buy food, the money was available. If there's anything that could be done to earn money, it should then become easier to make enough money to pay your mortgage. That's a gamble, though, and it's not one that I would really bet the farm on, which is exactly what you're doing if you do. You're betting the farm because your home will be, I don't care if it's a little suburban lot or it's a spread out in the country, in this scenario, your home is going to have to be your farm. It's going to be where you keep everything that supports you. It's going to be a homestead. Even if you're not prepared for it, you're going to have to turn it into one quickly. You're going to have to grow your own food. You're going to have to take care of yourself in this type of scenario. That's the other thing. FEMA can't respond to an economic collapse. FEMA can't roll into the region and bring stuff from a point of safety to the point of concern, all right? If you think about how New Orleans was handled, even if you don't like the way it was handled, eventually they got their act together. Eventually they got people in the materials and support that they needed. But they did that by setting up operations outside of the city, bringing you materials from other places and then relaying them into the city and slowly recapturing the city and slowly bringing it back to the right type of environment where it was safe and then continuing to stage and build up, all right? And in economic collapse, you don't get to do that. You don't get to sit somewhere safe and come in from the outside. There isn't a place where everything's still okay. All right, an economic collapse of a nation is nationwide. It's everywhere. It's all at the same time. And you can't fight it with a gun. You may need a gun to defend yourself. You can't fight it with a gun. The government can't put it back together. All right, it's a totally different scenario than what most people have in their mind when they think about emergency and disaster preparedness. Now, so what can we do that's specific for this type of threat? And folks, I got to tell you, again, I'm not in the business of giving financial or investment advice or even telling you what to do. My podcast is always one man's opinion, and that's kind of my blanket disclaimer. But in my view, the best thing we can do is we can buy land right now. We can buy land that will produce and make sure that we have that land as paid for as possible, as little financing on it as possible. And we can begin to turn that land into something that's going to make our lives a little bit more bearable and support us and prepare for us in the future. That's something that we can do today, that we can do right now. That's probably one of the things we should all be doing. Because if you live in the heart of an urban area and this scenario comes down, you're not going to want to stay put. And if you don't have like a group that's already together, some group of people that you can kind of bug out with and hole up with, and unless that's really planned at a very detailed level, don't count on it. You know, I mean, you got to count on yourself in these scenarios here. And so unless you have that, you really need to kind of create it for yourself. Sorry, folks, that was a little distracting. I paused for a few moments there. It was pouring rain. I don't know how that's going to affect the quality of the recording, but it did have me a bit distracted. Going on, though, what I'd like to kind of continue to think about is this concept of this widespread, unstoppable, unfightable disaster of economic collapse. And what we're really going to have to realize here is that storing food is great, but that will only take you so far. Even with 2 years of stored food, Odds are that whatever you plan for 2 years is going to last you 18 months at most, because odds are that, you know, somebody's going to show up that you're not going to turn away and eat some portion of that food. There's going to be some family member, some friend, somebody's going to call out to you. Or, if you're with a group, you are together going to look and go, you know, we need to help some other people. We need to bring, maybe you want to bring some people into your group to provide more manpower, more horsepower, more defense, depending on how bad the situation gets. So you're gonna have a propensity that if, even if you had 2 years, it's not going to last 2 years, which means if you have 6 months, it's not going to last 6 months. So storage will only go so far. So you have to be prepared and plan to provide your own food through either keeping livestock and gardening. And those two things really kind of go hand in hand. So that's something that really has to be planned for. And, that, you know, like again, if you don't have space, if you don't have land where you can do this, you're not going to be able to do it. The other thing you're going to have to plan for is defense. Now, I'm not a tinfoil hat brigade member. I'm not paranoid. I don't see, you know, hordes of 1,000 people ravaging the countryside looking for farms with food. Because I think that most of the unrest is going to happen is in the urban areas. That's where people are going to go. People are going to blame the government, not the farmer. That doesn't mean that there won't be some raids on farms. There won't be some invasions. There won't be some threat. There might be small bands of people. The small band of well-trained individuals, maybe prior service military, that didn't prepare but get together after they're hungry and need to feed their family. These could be the bigger threats. So you're going to have to be prepared to defend whatever it is you have. The best way to do that is to pick a location that's as remote as possible. The more remote a location becomes, the less of a reward there is to go there, and the greater the risk is. If you're going out somewhere in the fields out in Idaho, just on the foothills of the mountains there, the odds that somebody will shoot you in that scenario are much higher than if you're going to raid a farm just outside of Los Angeles because the migrant workers have vacated because the dollar's not worth anything anymore. All right? It's just the odds are higher. Then the other thing is, if you stick to the urban outskirts, so to speak, in that scenario, and if you're well-trained, you know, you're going to think this way, then there's going to be more. There's going to be a greater concentration of things to loot and pillage than if you go out in the wilderness and you're going to have to fight hard for each little piece that you can acquire. So number one is location. Number two is hardening your location. And there's different things that you can do to harden a location. One of the easiest, though, is simply fencing it, even with just simple barbed wire. Simply because that's going to require somebody to take time to get through it. That gives you time to assess and deal with the threat. I mean, that's one of the big ones. Number two is to have animals on your place that don't particularly care for strangers. And you know, these could be anything from Dobermans or Rottweilers, a conventional kind of watchdog type scenario, to just a couple big old curs. I mean, I'll tell you what, a mountain cur is a great hunting dog. It's a good dog. If you got kids and it's those kids are part of the family, it'll protect those kids from anything. But when it comes to protecting from strangers, they're pretty territorial. And at least even if they don't bite, they're going to let you know what's going on. So that's another thing that can be done. Now, it's another mouth or mouths to feed. But generally speaking, I found that a good dog more than pays for himself in his diligence in taking care of the family. And his diligence, especially with kids, and helping kids to deal with situations that are absolutely going to be pretty hard. There ain't a boy out there that had a dog as a kid that doesn't remember his first dog and still in his heart love his first dog, even if he's a grown man today. And that speaks a lot for what that can mean to a family in that scenario. So dog and fencing are kind of two easy ways to harden some land. I'm going to talk more about that in a future show, more specific. But, I mean, what you have to realize is that if you have a decent piece of land, 5 acres, 10 acres, 2 acres, 100, I don't care what it is that's producing food, in a scenario where people are hungry, you're going to be a target. I mean, another thing that you can do to prepare, and this is something that you'll never lose if you do this. You can't use it up. It won't go away. It can't be repossessed. It can't be taken from you. Is learn methods of preserving food. Learn all skills. Learn to garden. Learn to fix things. Learn how things work. Learn the basics of a car, but specifically learn how to preserve food. Learn how to can, you know, learn how to pickle, learn how to dry food, learn how to build a root cellar, I don't care in particular, you know, what method you choose to learn. My view is learn them all. Even the ones you can't practically do right now, learn the mechanics behind them. Learn what needs to be done. Assess how long it would take to do them. Put timelines to completion. If you weren't going to work every day and all you were doing is putting together a homestead, how long would it take to do these things? If you end up in a situation where you have to, that'll help you prioritize them. I mean, that is one of the absolute most valuable things that you can do is increase your knowledge. That is a huge part of being prepared. How do I do things? And if you've noticed, I don't do a tremendous amount on this show about wilderness survival, you know, how to make a solar still in the wilderness or something like that. I may do it in the future. I focus more on, you know, how you're going to live day to day, because you ain't going to live in the woods with a tent and a lean-to and a knife and running around the woods trying to live like, you know, Davy Crockett or Daniel Boone, which both of those guys actually led a little bit more of an urban life in some ways than many people realize, okay? So even those guys didn't go out with a Bowie knife and try to survive on that alone for long periods of time. Sooner or later, you have to set up a base of operations. That's really what I focus on. And that skill set of being able to do the things that everybody knew how to do 120 years ago, right? Everybody knew how to dig a root cellar. Everybody knew how to do basic carpentry. Everybody knew how to fix a hole in a roof. Everybody knew how to do these things. Today, very few people really know how to do this stuff. And even people that know how to do some of it don't generally know how to do all of it. So part of your prep is simply acquiring the knowledge, even if it's even if it's just a book knowledge for a time. I mean, at least you know where to start. I mean, another thing you could always do, and this is something a lot of people won't do, but a lot of, you know, you could do this, is, go volunteer to do some construction work. You can do that through Habitat for Humanity, going out there building houses for people that don't have them. Or even, you know, find a local construction company, if you can find one that's doing business right now, and say that you'd like, if you work with them over the week, you'd like to maybe for 2 months every Saturday come in for 4 or 6 hours. Most of those guys work Saturdays. And you'll work for free. You just want to learn how to frame. You want to learn how to do basic carpentry. Very few people are going to turn you away from that. You might find a new trade out of it, or you might not, but at least you'll gain the skill. Just about any skill you'd want to learn, there's probably a way to do it that way. So that's an interesting thing to think about. I know a lot of times people aren't big on what they would call working for free, but you're not working for free. You're working to learn. You're working for knowledge, because one day you may need to know how to do that work, because you may be doing it to put up a barn for yourself. If you don't know how, it might be a good place to start. I'm not saying that's my take on the situation, what I'm going to do. I'm just going to say there's always a way, and the people that survive and the people that do the best in situations like this are the ones that think creatively. So focus on knowledge. Focus on your ability to produce beyond what you store, and indeed keep storing food, keep storing supplies so that you can make it long enough that you'll have the opportunity to get enough homesteading done to where you can actually produce some of your own food. That's going to be really, really important. And once you get that done, then you can kind of get the, you know, you get up ahead of steam and you start to really provide for yourself. Because again, with an economic collapse, it could be 5 years before recovery. It could be 10. Folks, it could be 15. And by the time the recovery starts, it may not be a recovery for everybody. Let's say that you were 50 years old the day that, like, some kind of an economic collapse happened that really took the country downhill for 10 years. And it began its recovery about 10 years, 12 years later. Well, we know that after that's happened, Social Security's gone. So even though you're 60 to 62 years old, Social Security's out the window. You've probably depleted most of your money because it became worthless anyway. And now you're 60 years old, and you're looking for a job during an economic recovery. At the initial stage of that economic recovery, you might not be the most marketable person. Whatever skill you had at the beginning of this disaster may not be in demand at the end, even if you're 20 years old. So we have to plan to get into a state where we can live as long as possible, as good as possible, with as little as possible from the outside world, to be as self-sufficient as we possibly can. And that's what's the big difference between this economic potential disaster and all the other disasters put together. It won't just run its course over a month or weeks or even 6 months or even a year. An economic collapse of this nation is going to take decades to recover from. And, you know, if you have land or you have property, that you live on already that you would stay at, or if you've secured or procured a place to go to if this scenario comes. In either of those scenarios, you can begin to stockpile supplies beyond food. If you think about it, some of the things that you might need would include lumber. Now, right now, you can go buy down at Home Depot for about $2 a stick and buy 2x4x8 foot whiteboard lumber. Now, that's not the best wood in the world. It doesn't hold up outside. It's not pressure treated. But you know what? It might be a good idea to have a little bit of that stored somewhere where it's safe and dry. All right. You might want some pressure-treated lumber. You want some, you know, some 2x8s, 2x6s, just some wood, nails, tools, a hammer, saw. Not, and don't rely necessarily on electrical saws or chainsaws either. I think both of those are important. I have a chainsaw. I consider it part of my survival gear. All right. But, I might get in a situation where I even have some gas, but I only use it when I need it, right, not all the time. So having hand saws, hand tools. Things like that, so that you can build things and construct things. Good time to start stockpiling that stuff. It's relatively inexpensive. What you have to understand is that in an economic collapse, what becomes at risk most is money and debt. Those two things together. Because the money becomes worthless and the debt becomes unpayable. So everything you do should be around converting cash into some kind of commodity that has value to you. If the collapse comes or if it does not, if you start stockpiling materials to build things that you want with at your retreat or at your home, if you're already at what you would call your retreat, and the economic collapse doesn't come, then one day when you get the time, you take those materials and you build the things that you want anyway. If the collapse comes, you've already procured them because think about it. If we have riots in our streets, not only can you not run down to the local supermarket, right? You can't run down to Home Depot or Lowe's or Ace Hardware either. So nails, building materials, shingles, right? Tarps, things like that. If you begin to stockpile, just plan the things that you want to do. If you already are homesteading somewhere, plan the things that you want to do and begin to acquire the commodities to do them with now, because we also know that history's shown us that those things, even if we don't have a major collapse, are going to go up in price anyway. So buying this stuff in pieces, parts, make sure you have a good, secure place to store it, both from the elements and from vermin that would steal it from you. If you have a remote location, again, I cannot overemphasize the importance of having someone on site that keeps an eye on it for you and pay that person money to do it. I don't care if it's $50. It's a valuable thing to do. And it's something that if you do that, you're going to have gone a long way toward providing yourself an additional layer of protection. And when you do have to bug out, or if you do just leave because you've gotten tired of the system and it's time for you to do this anyway, right, then the people that you're going to have living around you are going to be a lot more friendly to you because you've established a relationship with them while you weren't really kind of there all the time, because we're going to need other people. And that's kind of the last part, the last thing that I want to talk about in your preparedness for this economic collapse, and that is putting together groups of people and getting them kind of in touch with each other in a way that where they're going to be able to cooperate in a situation where the shit has hit the fan and there is no short-term solution. FEMA's not coming. Recovery's not just around the corner. I mean, we're in for it for the long haul, and we're going to have to take care of ourselves for years, maybe even 5 years, maybe even 10. You see, folks, again, in that scenario, it's generally not going to be very possible for you to provide everything you need for yourself. I don't care how prepared you are. I don't care how many times you sat and watched Red Dawn when you was a little kid wishing you could have been there fighting the war with them. I don't care who you think you are or how prepared you think you are. You get in a scenario where you got to make it for 5 years alone. You don't have a job, and there isn't a job you can go get. And we have this real destruction of our economy that takes a decade to come out of. You ain't going to make it alone. You're going to need other people involved. And I think it's a great idea in these survivalist forums and things like that to start communicating with people. Find people at least in the general area that you're in. Start talking to them, because what you're going to have is local barter economies in this type of situation. I've got corn and you've got rice. I want rice and you want corn. Guess what? We can trade that, and we're not paying the tax man if there's even a tax man left in this scenario. We don't need cash. I give you corn, you give me rice. It's nice and clean, and it's easy. And if you're going to be trading in a situation like this where there's going to be threats and there's going to be dangers, you're going to want to do business with people you know. You're going to want to know them before it happens, because even people that want to trade with you in that scenario may not be willing to trade with you if they do not trust you. So it's time to start forging these groups today. That's part of your preparation. I just read, kind of kicked off this thought in my head, like the first few pages of a book called Patriots, the Surviving the Economic Collapse or something like that. I've heard about this book a bunch. I'm going to go ahead and get a copy and read it, and I may redo another podcast on my thoughts on that book after this. But one thing I got out of just the first few pages is these people have put together a group. And they got together with a group that all went to one location together on 40 acres. If you can do that, man, that's great. But I think most people are not going to be able to put together groups quite that tight. But if you had a group of a couple dozen people that have all prepared for this, even in the same county, where you can organize like a common meeting place where everybody, you know, does whatever they can to get to a place once a month, to do some exchanging, you can go a long way toward improving your self-sufficiency. If you can get people that are up and down the road from each other walking distance, where you're kind of protecting, guarding your whole neighborhood collectively together, so much the better. I don't know how exactly any individual, you know, I can't tell you this is how to put together something like that, because every individual is going to be different, and finding people that want to play ball with this is its own unique set of challenges. That are open to this, to even think about things like this. That's its own unique challenge. What I'm telling you, though, is there's always some level of cooperation that can be put together. Make sure you know people before you need them. Make sure you know people before you have to rely on them. And make sure you find as many people as you can who get it, who understand that this stuff is real. Because what I want to finally summarize with is what the real potential for this is to occur. Not a complete, you know, breakdown of all the threats that we have in this scenario. Just a few things just to kind of drive home that this may be, you know, the biggest threat that we really have to us that's real and could happen. I mean, if you think about this year alone, we saw oil go up to over $140 a barrel, and now it's down around $114, $115. People are saying oil's dropped. Oil hasn't dropped. Oil was $70 a gallon in August last year. It's $100+ a gallon this year, and people were complaining about it at 70. Oil hasn't gone down from 140 to 115. It's gone up from 70 to 115. See it that way, because that's reality. It's going to go back up. Right now, there's a little skirmish going on between the country of Georgia, not the state, the country of Georgia, former part of the Soviet Union, and Russia. Russia has begun to target, quote-unquote, an oil pipeline that comes out of Georgia to the west. That thing gets hit, and you watch oil go through the roof. I'm sure it's going to go up today some, just on the threat of that, even though it looks like things are winding down. My point about that is, if you would have asked anybody, is that a day, you know, do we have to worry about Russia invading Georgia 60 days ago? There might have been some informed people that would have said yes, but 99% of people would have said, who? What? What about Iraq? Iran? Come on, guys, pay attention. So my point is that when we think we have a handle on all these scenarios that could come up and bite us, like Bush going crazy and bombing Iran while we're in the middle of all this other crud, and you think, okay, well, that's the risk, and you're keeping an eye on it, then all of a sudden, pop, something else comes up. So that could drive oil back up. We've had Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae go to the brink of bankruptcy, and the only reason they did is because the Fed fired up the presses and printed more money and gave it to them, which further devalued our dollar, by the way. When we've had three, I think, banks close their doors so far, and I told you there would be plenty of them this year, not that long ago. And I'm not a genius. I'm not a financial wizard. I don't spend all my days watching the financial reports. I just look at reality, and I realize when there's this many people not paying their bills, when there's this much toxic debt out there, when the value of real estate's in decline like this, and the banks have all their money leveraged into consumer and real estate debt, you know what? We're going to have collapses, and they've come. That's just a little bit. I mean, we've had the biofuel boondoggle. We're spending all this money to produce ethanol that produces less energy than gasoline, and it's costing us more to produce ethanol and energy, let alone money, than we get back out of it. We're spending about 140,000, roughly, BTUs of energy to make a gallon of ethanol to get back 75. we're polluting our ocean. The Gulf of Mexico has what's called a dead zone expanding because of the biofuels and the excessive amounts of fertilizer that are now being used. We've driven the price of food up. The dollar has started to strengthen again, sort of, but it's still way, way down from where it was just not that long ago. All of these things have already occurred. And our debt is our nation is trillions of dollars in debt. We have over $53 trillion in unfunded obligations to Social Security, Medicare, and other social programs over the next 50 years. $53 trillion unfunded obligations. The government's going to have to make good on that promise. It's going to have to pay it. The only way it's going to be able to pay it is by printing money. Dump $53 trillion into the M3 money supply. Boom. It's over. All of these things are lined up and ready to fall, one after the other after the other. And all it takes to send this thing in motion is one nation out there that typically loans us money saying, you know, we don't feel comfortable anymore. That could do it. The Chinese finding some place to dump all their crap other than America and saying, we don't need your money, so we're not going to lend it to you so you can spend it back with us anymore. We're going to start exporting our crap to India, all right, or Europe, or wherever, all right? All it takes is one major epidemic of flu in this country that kills 5% of our people and shuts down the economy that's already in trouble. One major terrorist attack. One nation blowing up another nation's oil pipeline. Any of these things could begin the spiral. And like I said, the one nation blowing up the other nation's pipeline? 2 weeks ago, if I told you that was a danger, you would have laughed at me. Today, you're looking at it going, that's the danger. And folks, I'm not a soothsayer. I didn't realize that that was really something that was out there looming. What I've realized, there's always something out there looming. There's always a potential disaster on the horizon. And all of them could lead us down this road to financial disaster. And here's the final thought. The biggest thing that can lead us down this road is nothing. If we just do what we're doing now, and nobody in our government reins back spending and takes care of this, makes the hard choices, makes the hard decisions, and everything just keeps going the way it is, even the economy relatively starts to recover, this path will lead us to disaster. It can't lead anywhere else, because what we're doing is we're growing debt every day. Up, 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 up. And we're not growing surplus, we're not growing the ability to pay it off, and sooner or later you have to reach the end of that road. And the longer it takes to get there, the bigger the drop. So, you know, I want you to think about that in all of your preparation. Think about buying the things today that you'll need tomorrow. Converting your cash into the material or food type goods that you need anyway, that you want anyway, before there's an opportunity for the value of the money itself to become worthless. You know, buying lumber today is probably a good investment as long as you have a good, safe, secure place to store it. Buying food today, even the Wall Street Journal says that's a good investment for your money. Things like that. So those are my thoughts. Those are my ideas. And I hope this has been a good show for you. And we'll continue on with some other things in the future. And after I read that book, Patriots, I'm going to let you know my real thoughts on it. I'm very intrigued. I know that it kind of probably seems weird that I'm like probably the only guy in the survivalist movement that hasn't read that book yet, I guess. But, you know, I really do all of these things. I come up with these things not because other people tell me to, but because I just take my military and my business background and I assess the situation and say strategically what should be done. So that's kind of where I get my my planning modus operandi from. So hopefully it's been beneficial to you. And remember, here at the Survival Podcast, we're here to help you live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. And make sure you go by the blog at www.thesurvivalpodcast.com. Comment, suggest, and make sure you join our listener appreciation contest if you haven't already and help us grow the podcast to 1,000 listeners by October. And I'll tell you what, there's a free iPod Nano in it for somebody and some other cool prizes.
You can scream. You can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.